In this video, we have a chat with Griff from the Token Engineering Commons. And remember the last time we chatted with him? We're talking about how do we create public goods? How do we distribute public goods? How do we allow tokenization to allow us to create these public communities governed by DAOs? And this is exactly what the Token Engineering Commons have created. So that's what we will talk about today. Stay tuned. We're a little bit on a vacation, so thank you for taking the time out.
Oh, my pleasure. Can't miss the economics discord for this one. You know, economics design is kind of the name of the game. So thank you so much for having me.
I was just about to ask you, I think that will be a very good overview to get started. And then we'll dive into the little parameters that we can change and play around with.
Totally. So the bigger why is really the Common Stack mission, right? I don't know if you guys saw this Bitcoin City announcement yesterday, El Salvador. I didn't realize the president was so cool. Backwards gangster hat out there, volcanoes and fireworks, and just been like, we're going to build Bitcoin City, no taxes, no nothing. And I'm all about it. I think that is the future that we want to work towards. But we have to make sure that it's our city, you know, that the people are actually in control of these things. And the idea that we can live without, you know, taxes and governments and is real. I really do think that we can, because in the end, why should we have to pay for valuable services through taxes? Why can't people who provide valuable services be rewarded for providing those services, right? Like, this should be, and I think this is possible through economic design. We can actually solve the problems of funding public goods through economics. Public goods, this idea of non-excludable, non-rivalrous resources. This would be streetlights. This would be a lighthouse. This would be public health, public defense, you know, public safety. These things are benefit society at large, but they don't have their own business model because there's no customers. For a business model, you have to have customers. So you have to exclude people and say, well, if you pay, then you get these benefits. But if you don't, then get out of here. And this is also, in a way, what taxes do. They say, oh, well, if you're a tax-paying citizen, then you get these benefits, right? Social services and these sorts of things. And I think that we can actually make it better than that. And I think we can actually provide valuable services at a profit for society. This is, I'm trying to get this idea of abundance economics coming out. And this is what Bitcoin does. Bitcoin prints money every 10 minutes, right? And for printing that money, it gets people who want that money to, you know, check transactions and validate blocks and do all the mining action, right? And that is, Bitcoin provides a public good. Anyone in the world can create a Bitcoin address and receive money from anyone else in the world peer-to-peer. It's non-excludable. Anyone can create a Bitcoin address. It's non-rivalrous. You creating a Bitcoin address doesn't affect me. You know, it doesn't impact my experience. Now, of course, there's other benefits of the Bitcoin network, like sending money, that have their own economic system, but there is a public goods focus. So I want us to think about this as the why. This is what the Common Stack is building. We want to make people have the ability to create a public goods focused economy, a purpose driven economy. And in effect, creating startup microeconomies that can compete to provide public services. Imagine if instead of needing, the government to build roads, if we could actually have a microeconomy that gets the road builders and the landowners together to bottom up create a system that can actually reward the people who are building roads and decide which roads get built and when. And this is this model that we're using for the Token Engineering Commons is our pilot public goods focused economy. This is a model that can be rinsed and repeated for all kinds of public goods.
So how I look at taxes is a very good coordination tool where the private sector earns a lot of profits, but then it's built upon the public the public sector. So, you know, Google and everything is being built on things that is being researched by the universities, and government funds this thing. So there needs to be a cycle. So the way to coordinate these, you know, shift in value being transferred in the public and private sector, usually that's where taxes come into play. You make profits, profits go into grants by the universities, and then the cycle begins. So taxes is a coordination tool. What you're saying is that instead of using taxes as a coordination tool, you're building the infrastructure to allow that to exist without these taxes to allow for more efficient efficient allocation of value transfer, value creation, and, you know, yeah, value distribution.
Yes, and bottom up, right? Because right now taxes come, everyone has to pay them, and then it's very top down. And the government ends up with a monopoly over every public goods vertical, right? Well, what if we went instead bottom up? No taxes, no needs, because people are creating value, right? If people are creating value, they can be rewarded for that value creation. That's the base concept. So now, instead we have people who are the people who are creating that value, pooling capital, pooling labor, pooling expertise into an organization, into a DAO that has its own economic like backing. And then people who believe that this is a good idea, they can become investors in that system, and they can pool their capital, they can pool their labor, they can become participants in a bottom-up driven economy. The problem is that with crypto in general, it's not actually bottom-up, it's still top-down. We like to think that it's bottom-up, but we have these technocracies that form, because when the people are designing the economy, the technocracy, they do it in a back room. They do it they make all of these decisions. They think really hard. They put half of the information in a white paper so that people can understand what happened. But they had all sorts of discussions that were totally in the, that everyone else is in the dark of. And so, of course, when the system needs to evolve, there's only one group of people that can actually handle this, the making the decisions, because they have the background, they have the backstory, they know why certain decisions were made. So if we really want to do bottom-up economics, if we really want to like create systems that the public can use for public infrastructure, it's important that we start without a technocracy, that the people themselves actually get involved in the economic design. Now, of course, not everyone's technical enough to do it, but everyone should at least have the ability to participate. You don't have to be a developer. You have to be cool with numbers, you know? Like, there was a great podcast with Deacon, and it's like, listen, if you want to get involved in crypto, you kind of have to be a technical person, but you don't have to be a developer. You just have to be interested. You have to be like curious. And, you know, some people don't like numbers. Okay. Not everyone has to do everything, but at least everyone should be, if they want to, they should be able to.
So this is very, very important, because what we do, you know, in the off-chain world that we have today, it's all about everything is decided. And then we just, you know, the whole idea of game theory being a very important aspect of crypto is that we have these different rules and mechanisms done, and then people figure out what is the best optimal strategy or best optimal action for them to take before we figure out what the optimal outcome for everyone is. This is where crypto becomes so important, and it's so exciting to be in crypto, because we get to decide and define this first step. And what you're building is basically the tool, the infrastructure for us to all come together to decide that first step, and also to do it very publicly. And that's so important, because if we want to build a very fair and, well, not fair, fair is really a subjective word, but if we want to build a more open collaborative society and open collaborative economy, we need to start at first step. Right now, I think what crypto has done, fantastic job, but what we have done so far that crypto has in the past 5-6 years is that we have decided step one. And you have more and more smart people coming in to decide step one, but to go to the ideal, the next 5-10 years that we're looking at, you can't ignore step one anymore. Step one needs to be open, it needs to be transparent, it needs to be accessible for anyone to come in. And you guys are building the tool for that. And that's so important.
Yeah, exactly. And it's you know, we get so stuck on the economic tooling, like the technical tooling, but really when we're going to dive into this dashboard, but this dashboard was designed not as, we didn't design the dashboard and then build a culture around it. We designed the culture and the cultural tooling that was needed to make this kind of system work. It's not just about like, oh, look at these cool technical tools, how do we do it? It's really, hey, Like, we need political debates. We need space for people to discuss these things. How do we, let's build tools that can enable more discussion, that can make it fun, that makes it fun to participate. You know, I don't know, seriously, if you guys didn't see this Bitcoin City announcement, it was fun. There were firecrackers, a volcano exploding, the guys in there, there were aliens like involved. Like, it was really cool because that's how you get the people involved. You make it fun, you make it enjoyable. It doesn't have to be this boring, like, you know, let's all sit around and do homework for 8 hours.
Fantastic. Before we start the fun party, there was one question from Koja. How does bottom-up participatory economics play out in emerging economies with low literacy rates?
This design is not saying like governments normally do, hey, everyone has to be involved. It's saying just like a startup, you know, we can have a startup economy, right? A small micro economy, 20 people, 50 people, but they have a focus. Their focus is building roads. Their focus is, you know, taking care of the less fortunate in society. And then people who want to be involved can. It's open, but not everyone needs to be involved. Just like not everyone needs to be involved with a tech startup, you know, to build Uber or something. You know, not everyone needs to be involved in the road building commons, but it needs to be open so that people can be involved. Low literacy rates. Well, I still think people are not dumb, and we can still interact with people. Now, if they can't read, that's another level. And maybe we need to create a commons with the people who can read to get them up to speed so that they can participate in a lot more than just designing economics. Like, I mean, if they can't read, there's a lot of other problems that are going to arise more than, oh, they can't participate in like these tech startups.
I remember one other thing that you said the last time is that people at the position that they are most affected by decisions are most incentivized to make the right decisions. And this is not dependent on their literacy level, because they are there, they know what the best decision is. So how do we provide maybe other tools or other educational resource that's beyond the scope of economic design or beyond the scope of the tool that we have here to allow that information to be transferred into consideration points for these parameters? So
yeah,
little steps, everyone coming together, working together, using various tools available.
Yeah. And I think public education is a public good that this type of tooling could actually, like, what if you could invest in public education in a low literacy environment? What if it didn't require donations? What if you could invest in that? You know, that's the kind of tooling that we're building. And so maybe I should just get right into it though.
Yes, want to say that.
Okay. Great. So I'm going to start here. This is TokenLog. And by the way, I put a couple links in the Discord chats just above the Lounge voice channel. So this is TokenLog. And TokenLog is where we're curating good proposals. So this dashboard here, this is the dashboard. You use this to create an economic proposal, and then it comes up here. And so the whole idea is not for everyone to design their own economy from scratch, but actually for us to design, build off of each other's work and collaboratively and iteratively design the economy. So like someone made $1 million entry to Orogeny, someone else made $1 million entry to Orogeny with better CV. And by the way, entry into Orogeny is right here, you know? And so it's like iterating off of each other. And Orogeny, there was an originally, a token Orogeny that slaps. There was an original proposal called Orogeny. That Orogeny is a geologist made it. It's the art of, it's like how mountains form, and it's very slow. And that was like the Orogeny, like the slowness of conviction voting in this design ended up being really cool. And so a lot of people have been forking it. So here is what a proposal looks like. In each proposal, you can add memes. You know, memes are very powerful and important for economic design or any kind of voting that you want to win. And so you end up giving a strategy, and the parameters are listed out here with some really cool charts and data, right? And all of this data is formatted so that it can be standard, like so that it can be easily compared. So each of these proposals can be compared against each other. And you can see there's these four modules. And most importantly, there's this fork this proposal link, which is here throughout these GitHub issues. So this fork this proposal link is when you find one of these GitHub issues that sounds good, like, and you can read all the strategies, you know, check out these strategy links, and you can kind of get an idea of why certain choices were made. And if you like those decisions, or if someone presents one of these economic designs, you go in here and you hit fork this proposal. And that will actually import your parameter, the parameters that someone else had here. Maybe what I'll do to start is, before showing you how this dashboard works, I'll just pretend like you have some kind of idea and present what an economic design. This is $1 million entry to a Rajni with better CV. And so I'm going to present it and like normally, because this is what a finished product is.
So what CV is? CV is conviction voting. So it's a mechanism to vote. And this is a new method of voting. Usually we have one person, one vote, or one wallet address, one vote. Conviction voting is where when you vote, then you, as time goes by, your vote weightage actually drops. Your vote weightage actually drops. So you have to be adding more tokens in there because you're convicted of this decision. And as time goes by, and as you keep adding more of your tokens in there, like dripping it into in there, then it, at the end of your voting period, there will be the cumulative sum of your weightage of voting in general.
Yeah, conviction voting is a really novel form of voting. It's barely voting. Honestly, it's more formatted like donating. Right, except it doesn't cost any money because you're not donating, but you're staking tokens, your token weighted voting behind proposals. But there's no votes, right? So a bunch of people make proposals and they say, "Hey, I want to do this with our money. I want to throw a token engineering conference. I want to build this really cool model with CADCAD. I want to improve Token Spice as a modeling tool. I want to, I'm Lisa Tan and I do these really great videos. I would like to be sponsored by the TEC to make better videos," right? So different people make different proposals, and then everyone can kind of allocate their tokens behind the proposals that they want. And the more tokens that are there for the longer period of time, the more voting power accrues. So voting power is based on tokens times time. It's not, of course, just straight math, but like multiplication, but it's a function of tokens and time. So maybe I'll go through these modules. Okay, so I'm showing off module 4, going in reverse order because we're talking conviction voting here. So in this module, you know, I'm not going to explain each parameter because each one of these parameters has a nice rollover that tells you what they do. And then there's also this learn more button. The learn more button will bring you to a nice short blog post that you can even listen to if you don't want to read it. And in each one of these, there's links below it that have forum posts to different concepts. So if you like really want to talk more about conviction growth or the spending limit, you can click there and you'll be sent to a forum post that that you can go really deep into the topic. So in conviction voting, this module is really cool because you can simulate funding requests. So you can see this chart. This chart is about the percentage of people voting on. So like conviction voting only doesn't account for every token that exists, but it only accounts the effective total supply, which is number of people voting. There's like an abstain proposal where you're like, "I don't like any of the proposals. I'm just voting for abstain," right? And that kind of makes it harder for all proposals to pass because when you're using conviction voting, it's like how of the tokens voting, what percentage of them are going towards this proposal? And so then on the bottom is like the percentage of funds being requested. So if you're requesting $1,000, you need more voting power than if you're requesting $100, right? Like if you're requesting $100,000, you're gonna need a lot of voting power, right, behind it. And that voting power we refer to as conviction. And so there's this really cool simulate funding request Or you can say, okay, let's say I'm asking for $10,000 and the common pool has, let's say the common pool has $800,000 in it. And there, the total number of tokens voting is 1 million. Then in 7 days, right, under this scenario, with $10,000 being requested, $800,000 in the common pool and 1 million tokens, in 7 days, if 160,000 tokens are staked behind that proposal for 7 days, it will pass. Okay, but in 2 weeks, it only needs 80,000 tokens to sit behind it for 2 weeks, and then it'll pass. In a month, it only needs 40,000 tokens. In 3 months, it needs 23,000 tokens, right? 6 months, okay, 12,000 tokens. And so you can see that under this scenario, under these parameters, there's a very strong incentive for minority opinions. Like if only 3% of people feel like this is, believe that this is the best proposal, they can stake their tokens behind it and it will pass somewhere between 1 month and 3 months. Looks like closer to 3 months because 23,000 would be like 2.3% of a million. So this is a nice configuration. There's a reason I'm forking this one. It's with better CV. I like these CV parameters. These are nice, right? Conviction voting parameters. But let's go to the first module. So that's how like module four works to configure conviction voting. Module one is, there's a little bit of backstory. This is not the first collaborative economics experiment the TEC has done. And the Common Stack thinks that actually to start with collaborative economics, it's not about designing the economy. It's about designing the purpose. Right? What is the mission, vision, values? So the first collaborative economics design cause was defining a mission, vision, values. This mission, vision, values is the mission, vision, values of the token engineering commons that they voted on, and anyone could submit a submission for the mission, vision, values, and then I think there were like 10 or 11 of them submitted. And before that was submitted, of course, there was a lot of brainstorming, and then we all worked together for 6 months before we actually and built a culture, and then we defined the mission, vision, values. And our goal in the TEC is to enable the creation of ethical, safe, resilient, and diverse economic systems to benefit societies around the world. And our goal is to become a shelling point for the token engineering community. You know, we have an economic layer, a social layer. We have certain values, integrity, curiosity, constructive inquiry. These are things that we're all aligning around, right? So that was the first step, was defining what is our purpose. We have this thing that Common Stack calls the hatch. And the hatch is how we bootstrap labor, capital, and expertise into the economy at the beginning, right? So people with expertise were able to put in capital, and people who put in labor and have expertise got free tokens. So we ended up raising $1.5 million, which is sitting in a DAO right now, and minting 2 million tokens. Those 2 million tokens will end up turning into TEC tokens. So module one is saying, well, with those 2 million tokens, those 2 million tokens, 25% of people got it for free. That's the people who just put in labor and got some for their expertise, right? There were 25% of it is free tokens. And I think it's actually like 24%, 23.9%. And the rest, this other 76%, about $1.5 million, they paid $1 a token. And right now, anyone in the DAO can actually rage quit, and some people have. They can rage quit and they can get 75 cents for every token. So these, I'm saying these numbers because they're very important for this module. You need to know there are 2 million tokens out there, that each token can be rage quit for 75 cents. Most of the tokens were bought for a dollar. Now, what kind of vesting do we want to require on those people, right? How long should the tokens be frozen so that none of them can be sold? And then how long do they linearly release? So in this proposal, it's 9 months, which is like having a baby, which is fun, memeable, right? And then 2 years of a release period. And we're saying that the opening price is $1.40. So you can kind of say that there's a price floor at $1.40, because none of these people can sell their tokens, and the way bonding curves work, that means the price, literally, this is not like a suggestion. This is not like Bancor's price floor that they had several years ago that just broke through. This is mathematically, the price cannot go below this number, at least not on the primary market of the bonding curve. So people will always be able to mint tokens at $1.40 or more. And so here you designed the vesting for the people who already have tokens. After the bonding curve is launched, the people who buy tokens into the bonding curve, there's no vesting, there's no lockups, it's all free. And so this is the bonding curve module. This is really fun. There you can read about what these all are, but this design is really interesting. So there's an opening price of $1.40. You can adjust that. And then the commons tribute. So in the commons design, you can kind of think of it as a two-piece economy. There's the conviction voting pool, the common pool, which is actually is basically a decentralized grant giving organization, and people who have tokens can vote on how to distribute money to people who are doing good work in token engineering. Right. So it's kind of like it's just a, you know, free money machine. Hey, where do we send money? Right. But then the economic arm is this bonding curve, and the bonding curve needs capital so that it can have, a strong, like the more capital it has, the less volatile the economy is, the less slippage there is when you're buying into the bonding curve, the larger purchases can be made without like changing the price. So there's value in having money there, but you have to balance this, right? Because we only have so much money. So how much do you put in the common pool and how much do you put in the bonding curve? In this proposal, the common pool has 950K at launch, and the reserve has $315,000, right? But then there's this other piece that's called the initial buy. And you can see here, this is the initial buy. This is kind of, I have a bunch of extra buys here, which kind of screws up the chart. But this chart is the bonding curve itself, and it's price versus collateral. How much money is in the bonding curve itself? So when it starts, we're here. We're at this dot, which is 315K. But we're the community, the Token Engineering Commons, is pulling back $250,000 to buy TEC tokens at launch so that it has tokens to collectively govern, right? Because it actually, the DAO itself doesn't have any tokens unless it does this initial buy. So it's going to buy 250. So at the opening price of $1.40, there's this many tokens, about 2 million tokens. And the DAO itself is going to buy $250,000, and there's going to be a tribute that goes to the conviction voting pool of $65,000. That's this entry tribute. This is why it's really high. And then there'll be 100,000 TEC minted, and the new price will actually be $2.11. This is a huge price difference, right? Well, that's because there's only $315,000 in the bonding curve, and we're putting in another 250 almost. So, well, it actually ends up being about 185 because whatever. And so so that's why this, you know, you can see how big of a buy this is. And this is because the reserve ratio is really low in this design. This design's focus was to get $1 million in the common pool at launch. And so it does it by having a high tribute and a high commons tribute and a high entry tribute. And then you can, what's cool is you can explore the bonding curve, right? You can add steps. So these first three steps are default, but then you can add more steps. And so you can kind of experience the bonding curve. What happens You know, next, okay, someone buys $5,000. This many TEC are created. Okay, the price is 212. Interesting, right? Okay, what happens next? You know, let's say someone buys 100,000. Oh, wow, that moves the price to 239. And so you can kind of like feel the bonding curve. So that's the bonding curve module.
Quick question. Yeah. Can you change the formula of the bonding curve?
You can't change any formulas directly, but by changing the reserve amount, you're changing the formula in effect. So if you put 50 here, then now, you know, there's 630. You're changing the reserve ratio, which is really what defines the bonding curve.
The Bancor style bonding curves are pretty basic. They're mm-hmm. just the reserve ratio is, let's see if how it's defined here, but it's effectively the collateral in the curve, divided by the market cap, price mm-hmm. times the supply. And so this is a constant in the Bancor style bonding curve, which is what we're using here. We can't switch out the bonding curve. You know, all these things have been audited, and we're saying this is the configuration space. But you can change what the reserve ratio is, which effectively changes the formula. So you can, and you do that by changing the commons tribute and the opening price. Both of these things will affect what the reserve ratio is. And so you can kind of, by changing these two parameters, you are determining how strong the economic design is, right? The higher the reserve ratio, the less volatile the currency is.
And then we have modifying the commons. So, you know, the economic design, we have conviction voting, we have the augmented bonding curve, we have all these tokens that exist. But what if we want to change the entry tribute, for instance? Like I said, this economic design assumes that we will vote to change the entry tribute every month. So this is the DAO that votes on yes, no decisions. Conviction voting is just for spending funds. And then this is for how do we decide if we want to change the entry tribute. You know, so support required, you know, all of these things. There's delegation. There's a quiet ending period and all these things. But this is all pretty basic. And like you can see in this tip, this is how long it would take to vote on a proposal, 7 days. This is how long it would take to execute a proposal. This is the amount of time you have to review your delegation. There's this really cool quiet ending concept that if the result of a proposal changes, then we actually add more time to the voting system. It's very cool. It's called DAO voting with a T, kind of like a play on Taoism. And it's a really cool voting mechanism that came out of OneHive. So yeah, so these are all the modules.
That's awesome. So you shared a lot of stuff. So let's unpack a little bit in different steps. So the first thing is when we create these kind of commons are really the same as DAOs, right? And mm-hmm. DAOs and commons, all of them, they work as a way to organize different people coming together. And the first thing, which is very important, not just within commons, but also with DAOs, is to set your mission and vision, because that sets your mandate of what the DAO does. Then it's very easy to to pass any proposals in the future or to get people to coordinate with the same mission and vision in your heads. And so that's very important. And that's the first thing that is being created. Then in general, these four different modules, this is so amazing, because what we do is we usually run them in Excel sheets. We do a lot of specific bespoke kind of analysis. And what you're doing is to summarize them together and get very quick understanding if we just need a general parameterization of all these different variables. And that's absolutely beautiful to make it easy for people to consider how their decisions of setting the parameters will have an impact on the outcome. So here we went through four different kind of modules, or four, as you see, 1, 2, 3, 4 over there. The first thing is the voting, the conviction voting. And that is really deciding how do you spend your funds, requesting funds. So that's spending money within the DAO. So that's number 4. And then we went to number 1, which is this is how do we start the DAO, how do we start this entire thing in the first place? You know, we talk about token launch, token lockup, token release, all these different things. These are very important in your step three of all these different economics that you design. Step one is more of defining your vision and vision. Step two is having all these different parameters in place, then and all these different economic policies and mechanism design and token design, monetary policy. Then step three is to put them all together as different parameters and we design this entire world. So
yeah, and there was one thing that happened before that I didn't focus on too much, but we had the hatch. And the hatch was where we collected the initial capital and we also collected the initial people, you know, the people who were important, like Michael Zargum, Trent McKinney, you, Lisa, you know, and we went out and we were like, hey, we need all the token engineers. We need all of them. You know, let's get them. Let's get the people with expertise involved. Let's reward the people who are putting in labor for a year to like make this a reality. Let's find a win-win solution so capital can be collected, right? And then we ran the hatch and people put in $1.5 million into the hatch to fund, you know, token engineering public goods. And then that was, then one, now that we have defined this very sticky, these very sticky parameters, like how much money do we have to start with? It makes parameterizing the bonding curve and conviction voting way easier. So yeah, that was the first mission, vision, value, first cultural build, then define mission, vision, values, then do a hatch, then do the collaborative economics on the final economic design. And that's where we are now.
Awesome. Yes. So that's super important to have the initial fund and initial capital, not just capital as in financial capital, but also knowledge capital, social capital, all coming together. And then once we have all these different, you know, inputs in place, then we need to have different kind of constraints and or we have different kind of definition of what's next. And so this is where the token freeze and token thaw comes in to share a little bit more about what these different parameters are or what constraints that we have and then what will the output look like and other kind of analysis below. Then the second one is, and the number two is the augmented bonding curve. And this is where we are looking to set the various parameters that we have in place to look at what are the different analysis outputs or almost a sensitivity of how it will look like for all the other people given these parameters in place. And this is really, really important because one of the things is, as I mentioned, we do a lot of stuff in Excel sheets and, you know, Excel sheets take a long time. Here, we just need to put different parameters in, press the button, and then we get a good amount of analysis out for you to decide what are the different parameters that is reasonable that can get different kind of outcomes that we're looking for. Because at the end of the day, this is a DAO. This is a decentralized commons. This is completely decentralized. You can't be like Facebook and say that, okay, Mark Zuckerberg says yes, and then everything will just be changed and everyone agrees to that. So because of that, you have to think like second step, third step, fourth step of how people will behave, how people will act, or what will be impacts to people in those other tertiary steps. And that's something that's very important because that's something that a lot of people don't think so much about. We're just thinking of the next immediate, you know, impact or effects to what our parameters have or different inputs that we have. But reality is that there's a lot of cascading effect to all the different parameters we've put in. So here we can figure that out. We can have better understanding of that. And the third one, which is modifying the commons, that is where we say yes or no to changing the parameters. Because all these analysis, at the end of the day, we got to vote. And how does that look like? And what are the things to consider? It's all there under modifying the commons.
And this is really modifying the commons and like collaborative economics and DAOs. Really, I think it's understated, this idea of deciding how to decide, right? With a DAO, the way decisions happen is defined early. So you decided how to decide. You decide how to decide here. It's like for a yes vote to go to pass, is it 80% of people have to say yes. If 21% of people say vote no, then it doesn't pass. Or should it be 75%? Most DAOs are 50%. I think that's dumb. Personally, I think it needs to be way higher. And you can see that in most DAOs, the final vote is like 93% or higher. Yes, right? So that's why if no one's going to vote no, if it's not reasonable to pass to actually stop a proposal. So making a higher support is important. How long should votes last? This is deciding how to decide in advance.
Awesome. Very, very important stuff. And, you know, as we're building this ultimate goal of the whole decentralized world, there are a lot of tools and infrastructure that has to come in place. And this is definitely one of them.
Okay. Yeah. What I wanted to ask was, this particular application which you, demonstrated, Griff, kind of a white label one, which can be used by other initiatives, say like emerging economies.
That's exactly the intention. So the TEC is our prototype, our pilot common. So there's the common stack. The common stack, we want to design, thousands of these. We want to enable communities to design thousands of these economies. And we want to make it fun and easy. And we're building all this tooling, right? The TEC is a DAO that's specifically focused on advancing token engineering. They're strategically, for the common stack, the pilot project, because we need better token engineering tools so that we can design public infrastructure focused commons. And so it's a very strategic pilot project for the common stack. But the common stack built this dashboard, even though it has TEC all over it. Common stack did this. And it's exactly that. It's supposed to be a white label thing. However, this is a prototype. It's a hack. We hacked this shit together. This is not the final thing. We're learning so much. We're going to remove so much, like this augmented bonding curve. What is all this crap? Way too complicated. We're going to remove all of this. We're going to make this way simpler. We're going to make so many improvements. This is not the white label version. This was our first attempt at it. And these things just take time, to do right. So especially when you're a nonprofit, Common Stack doesn't have crypto money, We have crypto donations, different game. So it's going to take time to build all these things correctly and learning. But the next move for the Common Stack, after we observe how the TEC launch goes, we will, rebuild all of these tools to be more so that they will be able to be white labeled, and we'll probably try to launch 5 commons all at the same time. We don't launch them. The communities launch themselves and we advise them, but we'll build the tools so that for the needs of those commons, and then that will all be white labeled.
So how can someone participate in the common? How can someone participate in TEC?
Okay. You want to see this right here? This rolling, scrolling, annoying advertisement at the top?
Are those recorded, and do you post it on YouTube so that some other people who can make because of time zone difference, they can watch it? Yeah.
Well, honestly, if you click that calendar link, you'll see that we span all time zones. And there's like 4 a day most of the time. So these are this week. There's still a little bit. There's going to be more. They haven't really. We mostly post them on Monday, so there'll be more. But this is like last week. This is how many param parties we had. We had them at 5 a.m. my time, and we had them as late as 5 p.m. my time. So they're spanning the whole. These would be great for Asia, I think. This is 12 p.m. in Europe. So I think it's, right now it is 3 p.m. in Europe. So it'd be 3 hours earlier. This is where we are now. So, you can come to any of these. They are recorded, but honestly, that's not how you do collaborative economics. It's not through watching a recording. It's by active engagement, collaborating, making a proposal, presenting it, debating it, and then like being challenged and like improving it, and other people watching the debate and being like, yeah, I agree with some of those questions about that one. I'm going to fork that proposal and include some of that information that I learned from the debate, and I'm going to make an even better one, and I'm going to the debate tomorrow and I'll show them what's up, and my economy is going to be the one used for this $1.5 million. And that's the cool thing. You can design a $1.5 million economy. Your parameters can actually go in, because this isn't Vitalik deciding 32 Ether. This is the community deciding how do we want to use, what bonding curve do we want? So, but you do want to get this stuff going really quickly. We will actually be doing the final votes like in about 4 to 5 days. People are going to start voting over the next weekend. So like that's when we're encouraging everyone to vote. And this week it's a lot of debates. And so you want to get your parameters set in as early as you can. And actually, let me show you how you submit a parameter set. So let's say that you came in here and you're like, yeah, you know, this is a nice parameter set, $1 million entry to Orogeny, but actually, maybe I'm just going to make it like, I'm going to change this because I think the bonding curve is too, the bonding curve, like reserve ratio was too low. This is like, it was 11%. I'm going to make it 16%. And we'll only have like 900K in the common pool. But otherwise, I love it. You know, so I'm going to go in here and say, forked, 900K common pool. And then I'm going to say, just cross that out. 900K entry to Orogeny with better CV. Fork. Whatever. I could be better, but we have why bore you guys with me typing? And then you click submit proposal. And boom. You'll have submitted a parameter set that can be voted on token log. It takes some time because it's like making pictures of all the things. But yeah, and then it'll pop up here in token log. And if it's a serious proposal, you want to either, if you have TEC hash tokens, or you want to go talk to someone who has TEC hash tokens and have them put just a couple votes behind it so that like all the serious proposals kind of float to the top to be forked. And then people will continue to fork these proposals and present them at the debates. But you want to be careful not to vote too hard on any of these proposals because you can't take your votes back. And we will do the real voting next weekend. And in about 9 days, the top 3 to 5 parameter sets will be chosen for a runoff vote. And then we're using quadratic ranked choice voting, which as far as I know, it's the first time that ranked choice voting has ever been used quadratically. So that's kind of cool. I don't know of any other quadratic ranked choice voting, but ranked choice voting is really cool and you should check that out. But we're going to, you know, to avoid the plutocracy, and because we have strong identity, we can use the quadratic approach. And from those top 3 to 5 proposals, the one that was chosen will actually be the economic design. And that will all take about 2 weeks because we want to do like a good job at making sure that everyone, like create a voter's pamphlet of sorts, you know, and make sure that people can be informed.
That's awesome. And that's really, really beautiful things that you're doing, these different tooling things, because just to summarize how we first get started, we first got started because we wanted to figure out how do we get everyone together to decide what are the different parameters to start an economy. So think of it as everyone is a founding father of this country, of a country that we're building. And what are the different inputs to put in? Different people have different ideas, different inputs, and you're creating the tool to have everyone's opinions or different kind of policies you want to have in place, put them there, put it as a proposal, everyone can read, can vote on that. And that's really important because as much as we believe in the tool being used, different dApps being available and protocols being available that we can have better, more efficient kind of economy moving forward, the parameters or the constraints in which, or the economic policies in which these protocols work are so, so, so important. Otherwise, you just have all your assets accrue to the creators, which is almost like the gods of this world. And here we want to decentralize everything, and here we have the tool to do just that. Well, thank you so much, Fogriff, for sharing all the 4 different aspects that we are looking at when creating a common asset or common good that is shared by everyone in the community. So you understand that creating a common good is not just about creating a DAO and then we're done. No, creating a common good involves so much more. It starts all the way at the beginning where we're creating common governance, where we have to come together to decide as a community, how do we define the economics? How do we test and try that? How can we play around with the different tools provided and then submit proposals so that everyone can vote together? The truth is that As much as we have a lot of information as an individual, we are really stronger as a big community coming together and make decisions based on that. The downside is that sometimes it takes a little bit longer time. But the upside is that we unlock so much more utility, so much more potential. So thank you very much, Griff, for sharing. And do check out all the other events by the Common Stack community and the Token Engineering Commons community, because they are fantastic people. Till then, I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.